And as I said this earlier, we're moving along at 18. I have relatively few motions, and I know there's going to be quite a few motions coming from council members. The first thing, the committee's met. We've done quite a bit of work. Everybody should have the document, either a paper copy. I know there's plenty outside or on disk or online. Right now, we have several alternatives for accumulation limits, and I think they're on page 30 of the document. Sounds about right. So what I would ask, rather than making a motion, do people have other ideas on what the committee has done there, and do they have something they would like to replace rather than adding anything new?
Are we going to have Rachel's presentation first, or?
That would probably be a good idea.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, you said move things along.
Didn't you just say meeting adjourned, right?
Okay, good morning. A bit of information to run through. I'll try to do it as efficiently as possible here. So purpose on our agenda today is to select the range of alternatives for analysis in Amendment 18. I'm going to go over check-in of our timeline, reminder of the purpose, needs, and goals of this action, give an overview of where we have come so far in the alternatives under consideration. Specifically, we have alternatives for accumulation limits regarding U.S.-Canada in-season trading and a specific Handgear A fishery. I'm going to run through the ideas that have been rejected or either not developed by the committee at this point. Also should insert a bullet there for have a slide of some input from the advisory panel. As well as the committee, and also a brief overview of a recent analysis of Gulf of Maine cod in Area 514 that the committee has done, PDT has done at the request of the committee. So you have a number of documents under the groundfish tab for your review today. The primary document is number one, the discussion document, that has all the alternatives in it, and a lot of the background information that the PDT has pulled together over the past year has been inserted into the infected environment section of that document. We also have a PDT memo on the Area 514 analysis, the meeting summaries from the last two committee meetings and advisory panel meeting, correspondence, and the last two PDT memos specific to Amendment 18. Again, a bunch of that was put into the discussion document, but there is some information that is in addition. So your timeline moving forward is going to be impacted by when the council selects the range of alternatives for this action, which you're scheduled to do today, as well as whether we need to move forward with either an EIS or an EA that'll implement, impact the timing from here forward in terms of the analysis and comment and review period that goes forward. The timeline on your slide is if we were to move forward with an environmental assessment, we could potentially take final action in November, implement this next May. This is a little different than the timelines on the website, which would be an EIS timeline. Implementation would be later into fishing year 2015, potentially 16, depending on the alternatives. So the decision on whether we would move forward with an EA or an EIS would be made once we get to the range of alternatives in the action, then we can figure out the timeline from there forward. I also wanted to mention on timeline, we've had the Compass Lexicon report on excessive shares completed in December. We're working with the Center for independent experts to have a peer review of that report. We've requested that that review happen June 12 and 13, with a final report coming out about a month later. I haven't heard yet if that will be the time frame, where it's a little out of our hands and will depend on the schedule of the peer reviewers that they select, but I'll let you know as soon as I know when the date of that review will occur. So our review of the purpose and need and goals of this action. The purpose and need was developed several years ago now, but it was to address concerns related to the potential for decreased fleet diversity and increased consolidation in the reef fishery, resulting from catch shares and currently low catch limits, as well as increases in catch limits as stocks rebuild moving into the future. The goals I won't read through verbatim. They were revised last June by unanimous vote of the council, including ideas of promoting diversity, enhancing sector management, promoting resiliency, and preventing excessive shares in the fishery. So getting more specifically into the alternatives that are in the document, in terms of accumulation limits, we have two types of alternatives, that would cap the PSC holdings, as well as cap the number of permits that can be held. For the PSC holdings, back in January, the council voted to task the PDT to develop alternatives that would cap stock-specific PSC holdings. So the PDT went back and calculated what the stock-specific holdings are as of beginning of fishing year 2010, the control date, which is April 7, 2011, in fishing year 2010, as well as fishing year 2013 to get a sense of change over time. The PDT offered four alternatives to the committee for consideration, kind of under three general, no action, and then three other general approaches of limiting holdings as of the control date, as of the control date, going forward with a straight cap for all stocks at a level recommended by Compass Lexicon, and then another alternative that would cap holdings relative to the degree of present concentration in the fishery. The committee then considered these alternatives at their last two meetings, revised the alternatives, and added to them. So I'll go over them a little bit more specifically in the next few slides. We also have a permit cap alternative that was put in the document in June that would have a 5% permit cap for individuals and entities. There's been extensive discussion about permit banks, if and how to treat permit banks differently in terms of accumulation limits. A definition of nonprofit permit banks has been developed by the committee with the help of the PDT. Ultimately, the committee is recommending to have the same accumulation limit for permit banks as other entities and not define nonprofit permit banks in this action. So to summarize the background information on PSC holdings, this is the holdings summarizing tables 17 and 18 in the discussion document. This is the holdings for individual human persons and permit banks. The first column is as of the control date. The second column is as of May 1, 2013. And the third column is the number of individuals or permit banks who have a PSC greater than zero in fishing year 2013. The orange and the purple shading denote the orange is that this highest holder is an individual human person. The purple is indicating that it is a permit bank. So you can see in some cases a permit bank has held for Gulf of Maine cod, for example, the highest holdings for both the control year and 2013. In other cases, it's kind of flip-flop back and forth. An important point here to not get confused is that many permits are held by more than one individual human person. So if person A and person B hold a permit with a PSC of, say, one, the total PSC held between those is really two. So you can't really add up all the PSC held by persons and get to 100. So it may be a little confusing to have percentages in these PSC columns. It's really more accurate to not have percentages there. So I can take more questions on that if that's confusing at all. So the first, for the PSC alternatives, we have no action alternative. And then alternative two would limit the stock-specific PSC at the maximum held by an individual or permit bank as of the control date. The council can select one or more alternatives, stocks which to apply alternative two, except for Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Flounder. It wasn't allocated in 2012, so we don't have holdings information in 2010 for that stock. Alternative three is limiting the holdings of stock-specific PSC to 15.5% for each stock in the fishery. Again, the council can select the specific stocks to which this alternative would apply. This was a percentage recommended by Compass Lexicon. Alternative four would limit the holdings of stock-specific PSC by stock type, such that the limit would be 15% of the Gulf of Maine, Cape Cod, Southern New England stocks, and 20% of the unit stocks, and 30% of the Georges Bank stocks. Again, the council can select the stocks which this would apply to. The committee did put in one option that would limit Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank cod at 30%, Gulf of Maine cod at 15%, and pollock at 20%. Rationale here is the holdings of Georges Bank stocks are generally more concentrated than the Gulf of Maine cod or Southern New England or unit stocks. And then alternative five was one that was added in by the committee, which would limit the holdings at 30% for Georges Bank winter flounder and 20% for all other stocks in the fishery. And so this slide here is a summary of all these PSC alternatives. It can get a little bit confusing. Alternatives 1 through 5, including 4A, that option. The asterisks for alternatives 2, 3, and 4 mean that the council can select one or more stocks to which these would apply. And the blue shading notes compares these numbers to the holdings as of fishing year 2013, and the blue shading notes where this number is lower than the current holdings of the highest holder in the fishery. So this, the blue may force divestiture. Some PDT comment on moving forward with this range of alternatives. With those asterisks, this really creates a lot of options for the document, and it'll be an almost impossible analysis for the PDT to analyze all the potential iterations, especially those alternatives with an asterisk. So it would help if the council would like to whittle this down a bit for us so that we can make the analysis more reasonable. You may want to select the specific stocks to which those alternatives would apply. The PDT in its work didn't have time to work specifically to have a recommendation on that. So the other alternative here is alternative for the permit cap. We have no action. And then for any single fishing year, no individual or entity shall hold 5% or greater than 5% of the permits. Holdings greater than 5% as of the control date would be grandfathered. Note we have about 1,400 permits in the fisheries, so a 5% cap would be about 70 permits. The most held by an individual or permit bank is 49 today, so this would not force divestiture. So even though there's a grandfathering clause, it wouldn't really everyone is under that cap anyway. One comment on the entities to which alternatives would comply would apply. The PSC alternatives apply to individual human persons and permit banks. The permit alternative is individual and entity. So just some PDT comments on this. You don't have to resolve this today necessarily, but just consider that business entities can form and reform with different configurations of individual human owners, perhaps to avert an accumulation limit. And so an entity has not been formally defined, and for the Reg Flex analysis recommendations, they're currently working on redefining what an entity or business entity is. There's no formal definition settled for that. In the limited access scallop fishery, their permit cap applies only to individual human persons. I was a little confused on this at first because Amendment 11 says persons and entities. The final rule just says persons. So moving forward with just human persons and permit banks would be more consistent with the scallop fishery. Without a nonprofit permit bank definition, if someone wanted to advert a cap, they could just create a permit bank name if they wanted to. Each state and nonprofit permit bank already has an individual human person affiliated with them in the NIMS database. So moving forward with just human persons would probably do the trick for this action. So you may consider applying all accumulation limit alternatives in Amendment 18 to individual human persons and state-operated permit banks, since those entities have specific definitions already. It may be less confusing. Moving on to U.S.-Canada trading, we have a no-action alternative. We have an alternative 1A and 1B. 1B actually just got implemented with Framework 51, so that's our no-action alternative. It would allow in-season trading in just fishing year 2014. Additional quota would be allocated consistent with the current ABC distributions. And then we have an alternative 2, which would allow in-season trades of U.S.-Canada stocks with two options. A, that trading could occur at the sector sub-ACL level, and B, that specific sectors or group of sectors could form could propose trades, and this would allow trading of specific sectors ACE. Some committee discussion on this. The committee recommends 2B as the preferred alternative, the sector-specific trading. The timing of the trading process may limit the number of trades that can occur per year. The committee had some discussion on this action, but no further motions on these following two topics. There was some interest in allowing U.S. vessels the right of first refusal before proceeding with an in-season trade. And there was some interest in allowing a process through Amendment 18 and then working out the details in subsequent frameworks. Regarding the Handgear A fishery, recall in January the Council passed a unanimous motion to develop a Handgear A fishery with about 10 different options. So the PDT developed those options into alternatives with some analysis, brought that to the committee. So alternative one is no action, and Handgear permit holders can choose to enroll in the sectors or the common pool and be subject to current rules accordingly. Alternative two would create a special fishery for the Handgear A permits. Option A would create a Handgear permit sub-ACL that would be for Gulf of Maine cod, Georges Bank cod, Gulf of Maine haddock, Georges Bank haddock, and pollock, to be used only by Handgear A fishermen. This table gives you a hypothetical maximum Handgear A sub-ACL for fishing year 2014, just to have a picture of what the total possible, the highest amount this sub-ACL would be, and the percentage relative to the overall groundfish sub-ACL. Option B would account for catch of other stocks and the other sub-component sub-ACL. We have several tables in the document that describe what this catch of the other stocks, describing that. So we just have, I just summarize that information here with the average fishing year 10 to 13 hand gear kept catch and discards in pounds for those other stocks. You can see that the numbers are pretty low on average. Option C would have proactive accountability measures, modifying trip limits in season to stay within the sub-ACL. Option D, as a reactive accountability measure, they would subtract overages from the sub-ACL in the fishing year following notification of the overage. Option E would allow a 10% carryover treated the same as the sectors. Option F would remove the March 1 to 20 spawning block closure. Option G, the hand gear A fishery would be managed with annual versus trimester sub-ACLs, as the common pool currently is. Option H would remove the standard tote requirement. Option I would allow grandfathering all hand gear permit holders who leased ACE in a sector in fishing year 12 and 13 may continue to do so. The PDT note a little bit of an issue with this. You would either need to sign up for the hand gear A sub ACL or you would need to sign up with a sector. You couldn't enroll in both under option I. And then the committee added option J. A sector may request through an ops plan that hand gear A vessels may be exempt from VMS if enrolled in a sector. They would continue to use the IVR system. So some committee discussion about this alternative. They were talked quite a bit about whether enrolling in this sub-ACL would be voluntary or mandatory for the hand gear A permits. If voluntary, what would happen if just a few, you know, 1 to 3 permit holders decided to enroll? Would that be feasible to administer? If mandatory, it would reduce choices available for the fishermen who can currently choose to be in the common pool or sectors. How would discard rates be calculated? The same as currently in the common pool? Would it be considered de minimis because it's so low? Would it be assumed at the beginning of the year and subtracted off the sub-ACL? And they had a bit of discussion about whether the regional office can really monitor catch in season by adjusting trip limits. Should the fishery close for the stock or the whole stock area when the sub-ACL is reached? So after quite a bit of discussion, the committee moved to support option F, the no March closure and the standard tote, and to consider adding option J, the VMS exemption, and then to move all other options to the considered but rejected section. So speaking of considered but rejected, you've already had quite a bit of discussion about permit or PSC splitting, modifying vessel upgrade restrictions, which is happening through an omnibus amendment. And so the committee is also recommending not defining nonprofit permit banks, limiting the holdings of permits by permit banks collectively, not doing that, and not limiting the use of stock-specific PSC. There were a few other topics that came up during scoping that the committee has had quite a bit of discussion about. In terms of incentives to actively fish, the committee did not pass a motion to develop alternatives that would allow a sunset for lease-only PSC holding, stating that it might increase effort and that leasing promotes diversity and prevents consolidation. In terms of baseline criteria for leasing, the committee voted not to develop this topic, stating that leasing across the fishery enhances efficiency and fosters diversity. Regarding quota set-asides, the committee voted to not develop this topic, stating that there is not sufficient quota for present-day participants and that the fishery cannot afford new entrants at this time. In regards to inshore-offshore areas, the committee asked the PDT to analyze effort in Area 514 and adjacent areas. The PDT presented its preliminary work on Gulf of Maine cod in April, which I have a couple slides about. The committee was not ready to recommend alternatives, but asked the PDT to continue its work. The advisory panel has met several times over the past 2 or 3 years to discuss Amendment 18. These are the motions that came out of the latest meeting regarding accumulation limits. The GAP does not support accumulation limits. If the committee continues to develop them, they'd like a focus to be on permit caps that do not force divestiture. That permit banks should not be given a greater cap than other entities. Regarding U.S.-Canada in-season trading, they feel like trading in-season trading with Canada should not be pursued at this time. If the committee disagrees, then the GAP recommends alternative to option B, the in-season trades of Sector ACE, which is what the committee also supported. On the Handgear A fishery, they didn't make any new recommendations in April, but in past meetings, they did not express support of the proposal. And they also do not support restraints on allocation, trading, quota set-asides, or creating inshore-offshore areas. So regarding the spatial and temporal analysis of cod distribution and effort, here's some highlights of the PDT memo. Cod distribution in the Gulf of Maine has contracted to the western Gulf of Maine in the area around the Stellwagen Bank. This was concluded by examining survey data back to 1968. And regarding changes in fishing patterns, fishing effort and catches have concentrated in Area 514, and the number of trips by larger vessels increased slightly, but the smaller vessel size class dominated the number of trips. The majority of the cod catches within 514 were taken by smaller vessels, and larger vessels have higher catch rates of cod compared with the smaller vessels. This is my final slide. For preliminary conclusions, the memo concludes fishing patterns appear to have changed in response to both cod distribution and management measures over the years. Management regulations have had different effects on different vessel size classes. The vessel classes have differing abilities to respond to these changes. Smaller vessels are more spatially constrained, for example. Trip limits appear to have constrained the two larger vessel size classes compared with the smaller class. And the risk of localized depletion on inshore spawning cod may possibly be increased at this time.
Well, thank you, Rachel, for a very complete and detailed report. Questions? Terry?
Rachel, during the 514 discussions at our last committee meeting, I brought up a couple things. I was wondering if you, the boats, 514 is a big area. 514 takes in the offshore Gulf of Maine and the inshore Gulf of Maine. You guys analyzed 514, but we hadn't broken out whether or not it was east of the closed area, Jeffrey's closure, or west. Have you done any of that work yet? And
I don't think we've had time to work on that much since last week. Jamie, do you have any?
So, to your specific question, what we had agreed on at the last committee meeting was that the presentation that I provided, we would stop there and write up that work and provide that to you today for the council meeting. And we are at a stopping point in that analysis. So, we're looking today to have if there's something else you want done or not. But we have not taken or have not scheduled any sort of additional analysis at this time.
Terry.
Yeah, well, I think it would do the committee a justice to be able to see exactly where those, what we're calling 514. Because it's a huge area, and we need to know what depth of water the boats are in. And but, I mean, if you could break it down to anything west of 70 degrees, west of 70 degrees in area 514. That would make a huge difference, Jamie, I think.
Jamie.
So just to be clear, the analysis that we did used vessel trip reports. And vessel trip reports, you know, the how people feel about vessel trip reports. But the analysis that you're suggesting is another level of intervention that would involve observer data. And so that would be an additional, potentially lengthy analysis. So I just want to make sure that that is understood. Certainly if there was something in the document, Amendment 18, about this, we, upon examining some of the impacts of whatever that alternative might be, we could look at some of that information as well.
Laura.
Hi, Jamie. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you, Rachel, for the presentation. I think the reason why Terry's looking for the information is because there are going to be some motions coming up about switching or implementing some inshore versus offshore based on that data, based on the assumption that there's been a lot of large boats fishing in inshore areas. And so I think there's a concern that that kind of division, whether or not that's justified or not, based on data that would suggest that 514 has both inshore and offshore areas. And so we need to better understand where those larger boats are fishing. Is it in the deeper waters or is it in the more shallow waters before we start drawing more lines in the ocean?
David.
Yeah, regarding Terry's question and the point made by Laura, I'll just highlight for the benefit of the council the memo that I sent to everyone by email, and you have hard copies that elaborates, provides additional information regarding 514 catch of Gulf of Maine cod specifically, which continues to be the species of most interest to me, and I think perhaps to this entire council. It's important for us to reflect on what Northeast Fisheries Science Center analyses have revealed and what some of our plan development teamwork has also revealed, where the majority of the Gulf of Maine cod catch is coming now. No surprise to most people, it's coming from relatively small areas in the western port of the western portion, southwestern portion of the Gulf of Maine, you know, near the on the edges of the western Gulf of Maine closure area, and then in some very specific spots directly east of Boston, heading towards the closure area and a little bit to the south. So the majority of the landings are coming from those relatively small areas. For example, this is the entire Gulf of Maine, too, not just 514. The entire Gulf of Maine has compressed cod, specific to cod, it has compressed right into the southwestern portion of the Gulf of Maine. And, again, work by the Northeast Fisheries Science Center has revealed that just five relatively small squares, geographic squares, accounted for 65% of all Gulf of Maine cod landings, with just one small area accounting for 45% of total landings. Now, that was in 2010, and it's safe to say that things have progressed even more relative to the concentration of effort and cod catch in those squares. So the motion that I'll eventually make relative to our dealing with inshore and offshore, specific to protecting, enhancing the protection of inshore resources, not necessarily one gear type over another, you know, that particular motion I'll eventually make is relying very heavily on this information regarding what's been going on in 514 relative to resource status and the potential for continued increased effort in that area. So I wanted to early on in these discussions highlight that that memo I've provided, and the previous two speakers have enabled me to do that.
Okay, and this is going to cut into your rationale time. Gene, then Matt.
Yeah, I might have missed this. In the alternatives for holdings on PSC, are those... is there grandfathering based on the control date for those holdings?
Not currently.
So, and the chart indicates that there's indication that some people would have to divest even holdings that could be shown to have been held before the control date?
Yes, so the council could clarify what they want to do about that.
Okay, that's. I think you have to look very carefully at that kind of requirement.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thinking back to the January Groundfish Committee meeting where the 514 analysis was first requested, we also included a request that the PDD look at areas in southern New England. Would you be looking for direction from us today to continue that work, in particular in perhaps a subset of statistical areas like 537, 38, and 39?
So as Jamie just said, we don't have any further direction from the committee at this time to continue that work. So if the council would like to direct that.
Yeah. Question? Sure.
Would that subset of statistical areas, and perhaps you can get back to me later on, would that subset simplify your task by just limiting it to those three areas, 537, 8, and 9?
Well, to the degree it's a subset, sure. But, you know, but also if we need to go into the observer data and get more specific on, you know, areas within those areas, that would add on to that as well.
John.
Yeah, you made reference to the Compass Lexicon report and being, I think, going to be analyzed by a panel of experts in June, but I assume some of this information there comes out of the report. Could you maybe kind of give, I'm not on the committee, and I apologize for the basic question, but I guess maybe an update on the status of that, if it's been peer-reviewed or and how it's been used in this analysis.
So that will be the peer review that will occur, and as I said, I don't know for sure if it will be in June. That schedule is out of our hands at this point, but there will be a one-day public. It's a two-day thing, one day for the public to attend. One day is just the panel, so that will be a public meeting. In terms of how that information has been folded into this, the alternatives, one of the recommendations that has come out of that is to focus on PSC stock, capping stocks on their PSC. So those alternatives that are PSC based, you know, have stemmed from that. They recommended two potential percentages, a 15.5% cap on PSC, stock specific PSC, as well as a 25% cap of somewhere in that range. So there's an alternative. Alternative three, I believe, is 15.5% across the board for all stocks. So the PDT drafted an alternative that was 25%, the higher number, because there are some stocks that would a 15.5% cap would force divestiture. So we put the higher percentage in. The committee revised that to the 15.5% at their last meeting. So there are some alternatives where some of their ideas are reflected.
Terry.
So I guess I don't know if we need to do this by consensus or a motion, Terry. I'd like to see that analysis west of 70 degrees before I think we can make decisions on what that says. And I'd be happy to work with Mr. McKenzie to put a motion up to take his 237, 238, 239, put it in there too. So, whatever those numbers were. So, I mean, I think we need that analysis in order to get informed decisions.
Tom's jumping up and down beside me.
So, I guess my question is, you know, Jamie has already and Rachel, I think, have already explained some of the issues with analysis to a finer locational detail, but whatever, you know, we can do the analysis where we want. I guess where I'm a little bit concerned is that we've had a number of discussions and we've had a number of comments brought forth by the industry at Scoping and by others, some council members and others, about an issue in the inshore Gulf of Maine and a concern in the inshore Gulf of Maine. I'm not sure, maybe I haven't been paying as close attention, but I'm not sure I've heard the same comments about fishing activity in southern New England. And so, you know, are we I guess I would look for a clear explanation of what the issue is in southern New England that has raised this concern, because I don't think, unless it's been at the committee meeting, I don't know that there's been as much of a concern raised.
Matt.
If I may speak to that point. I raised this issue at the committee meeting. On one hand, it's a jurisdictional issue. It seems to me that the scoping comments aside, I'll get to that in a second, that if we're analyzing the Gulf of Maine for this type of pattern, it seems prudent for us to continue that analysis based upon the statistical areas alone at this point. I understand the time constraints for our jurisdictional obligation south of Cape Cod. And I think that for that reason alone, we should do that. Anecdotally, I have heard, and maybe we'll hear from the audience a little bit today, of instances, instances of this type of fishing happening in southern Cape Cod. My concern is that do we need to wait for this concentration of inshore stocks that we've seen in the Gulf of Maine to happen in southern New England before we do something about it? I think it would be prudent of us to at least examine to see if there's an issue there, and if not, then there isn't. But I think while we're doing this for the Gulf of Maine, we statistical area 514, it seems to make sense to identify a statistical area or a subset of statistical areas that will allow us to assess whether or not this is happening south of Cape Cod as well. And so that's why I brought it up at the committee, and that's why I've got a motion for later today.
Other questions? Brett, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brett Tolley with the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance. I'm also from a fishing family, commercial fishing family, mostly in groundfish out of Massachusetts. Just a question for Rachel and the staff about the PSC percentages and how those were, how you arrived at those. And in the Compass Lexicon report, one of the conclusions in the report said that NIMS does not currently have data on the percent ownership interests of permits owned by multiple individuals. So, and I think Rachel got into this a little bit in the report, that there's some detail there that I think would be helpful to understand. And I guess the question is, how can the PSC percentages for individuals be determined if the data for multiple owners for a permit is not understood?
Rachel.
Thank you. And I understand that this is kind of a hard thing to get your head around. So NIMS doesn't have ownership interest. If there are two holders of a permit, they don't know the business relationship between those two people. If they have a 50-50 share of their business, or if it's 90-10 or some other relationship like that, they just don't have that level of detail of people's business relationships. So the data assume that if your name is on affiliated with a permit, you have 100% ownership of that permit. So it's kind of a rounding up in that sense. Take one of these stocks, for example, Georges Bank Cod. The highest individual has a PSC of 9.9. So there could be other individuals listed on his permits. They may not all be all listed on every permit. But all the permits that person is listed on, adding up all that PSC gets to 9.9. So if you take the PSC of all the individuals in the fishery, it's going to add up to a number greater than 100. It's not exactly a percentage in that sense.
Are there any further questions? Okay, seeing none, we're going to take a break and come back to the motions. The members, please take your seats. PK asked to address the council, plus just prior to lunch we're going to break, and Dr. Rothschild is going to address the council and with a request that he has, and Senator Mattagni's time is limited, so we are going to accommodate their schedule. So, PK.
Yeah, no, my comment was going to be quick. Actually, it was just to say Rachel, you did a great job on this presentation, because I've seen it plenty of times, but I like the way you highlighted some of the things, and I also like the way you put the discussion documents up in the corner on the pages. So my comment basically was to tell the council members, and Dave, just because you have a lot of motions, when you reference your motions, if you could give us a second, you know, we got a lot of paperwork here, so reference what page you're focusing on, and others as well, so we can see where we are. Thank you.
Very nice.
Thanks, PK. Okay, Frank, let it roll.
Okay. With that, I'm going to start on page 30 of the discussion document with accumulation limits. There's a series of limits there, and I would suggest that if anybody has any changes to those or questions on them, now would be the time.
Terry.
Yeah, I have a motion to substitute a option that's in the document now. Page 22 of your discussion document, section 4.1.1.2, alternative 2. 22 of your discussion document.
I don't think it's in 22. There are no alternatives on 22.
You're page 30.
Page 30. Yeah, page 30.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry, Frank. I may be out of line here. You want to do these options first? Is that what you're saying on page 30?
Yeah, no, this is appropriate, I think. 4.1.2.
Mine has to do with accumulation, PSC limits and stuff.
Yeah, you're correct.
Okay. So I'm looking at the discussion document from our other. Okay. So my page is different than yours, but I'm always on the same page as a lot of people. Just not many around here, that's all. So Karen has a motion?
Yep.
For me? And if I can get a second, then I'll...
Read it.
Okay, so it's okay to speak. So Laura, did somebody second it? Frank? Laura seconded it. Okay.
You haven't read it yet.
Oh, the motion is to substitute section 4.1.2.2, alternative 2, with an alternative that a person or entity may not own or hold more than 15.5% of aggregate PSC allocated to sectors.
Seconded by Laura. Going out to the audience for comments. Seeing none, back to the council. David, Matt. Actually, before you, David, Terry, your rationale.
That'd be great. This gives us some... I passed out the sheet to everybody. Hopefully everybody got a chance to read it yesterday and today. This gives us a formulaic way of people moving fish around inside the sectors. It gives a guy some room where, as our ACLs go up and down. It gives us some room to purchase another permit with more dabs on it or more graceful on it that we need to persecute our pollock hake quotas. And as those those PSCs, ACLs go up, then as the stocks are rebuilding, then it moves. It gives us some flexibility in moving stuff around. We have a possible 1,500 PSC shares in the ground fishery now, and a person would be capped at 15.5% of that. The Compass Lexicon report tells us with a cap of 15.5%, and I understand that that's only on an individual stock, a person could not get market power or have an excessive share of the fishery. Chad has repetitively shown us in his analysis that the right combination of permits to get market power is not highly unlikely. I'd say next to impossible. So I just think this is a good way to go. Gives guys some flexibility, and it may not go out. It may not pass muster in the public comment period, but I think we should get it out for analysis and public comment and see what people think of it.
David?
Yeah, I appreciate what Terry is attempting to do, and I know he feels very passionate about this because he's mentioned it a number of times, and now he's gone to the trouble of putting together something in writing, so I appreciate all of that. I would have preferred that instead of a substitute motion, he would have added it as another option, since by substituting for this particular option, we removed the lower percentages that are being offered up for public comment, PSC buy stock. I favor keeping that option in there, the one on table 2 on page 31. I favor keeping it in just to get public comment on those percentages. This would take it out, substitute something that's an entirely different concept that might be a real good concept, and I'm still trying to work my way through it to better understand its impacts, what it really means. I don't truly understand it yet, despite the work that Terry has provided. So I have to vote against this motion because it's a substitute. If it was as another alternative, I would support it. In addition, I would suggest that if Terry's willing, he should probably strike out the word own and just leave it may not hold, because no one owns these PSCs. They hold them. That's been made very clear to us. So I would suggest that as a change, and if he still wants to substitute, okay, but I'll have to vote against it because I don't want to lose that alternative 2 that the committee worked on, and frankly is an alternative with lower percentages that at this point in time is attractive. Especially since on the West Coast and some of the fisheries on the West Coast and elsewhere, they actually look at 5%. We also have a document prepared by, I think, the Environmental Defense Fund that I referenced a long time ago, where they came up with some work. They produced a document that provided some insights as to the sorts of options anyone might want to consider for holdings on shares, and 5% was in there. That's low, probably too low, but there are higher percentages in Table 2 that are attractive to me, not too high. So I don't want to lose that alternative, too.
Do you want to amend your motion?
Well, I was just going by instructions by Frank. Our chairman told us to replace something. That was the only reason I wanted to replace that. So.
I think he means amend where it says own and hold.
Take the own. I didn't know which word we were using nowadays. So, changes.
Okay, I've got Matt, Mike, Laura, and Matt, and Mark. And Mark and Doug, and Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share Dave's concern about this. It just severely restricts our range of alternatives, and I'll be voting against it. I'm also not quite sure what the difference is between what this substitution has us putting into the document and what alternative 3 would be. So, and perhaps I'm just confused, so some elucidation would help.
Mike?
Yes, I also share the concern that David expressed and that Matt has expressed. I'd also comment that the number of 15% or 15.5% that comes out of the lexicon report, I think we have to be clear as to what that number relates to relative to our objectives. My understanding is that that number is about exercising market power. That isn't necessarily related at all to the objective or the goal that deals with the issue of diversity. So I think, regardless of how the peer review comes out, that number makes sense to me in the context of market power, but I don't think that necessarily satisfies the objectives that are expressed in the action.
Laura.
I just wanted to clarify that I believe the reason why we have substitute is because we had just heard during the presentation from Jean that alternative two would be tremendously problematic in terms of scaling back that the shading numbers in two, which is all of alternative two, is a cap lower than the maximum currently held by an individual or permanent bank. So, as we heard yesterday about all sorts of time constraints that we have in the agency and the council staff, I think that it is problematic to put an alternative in there that we've already been told is going to be very problematic. So perhaps there are people out there that want to see something lower than 15.5, but alternative two seems to be dead in the water from the get-go. Thanks.
Gene?
No, that wasn't the intent of my comment at all. I wasn't saying alternative two is dead in the water. I'm just saying that you have to take into account whether you can justify divestitures of holdings that existed before the control date. I didn't think alternative two had showed that there were that many that did that. And certainly, I mean, I totally support the idea this should be added as an alternative, not as a substitute. I think gives a much clearer range of alternatives here. So my concern was just, in same with this option here, that if this requires divestiture of holdings that were held before the control date, you need to look closely at the justification for doing that and tie it directly to one of the goals and objectives that you're trying to meet here, including probably the most relevant one, if you're requiring divestiture, is that otherwise there would be market control that would, or excessive shares that would cause market control.
Rachel?
Just to be clear again, alternative two would not force divestiture to holdings prior to the control date. If there are holdings that have accumulated since the control date that are higher than those numbers.
Yes. I wasn't concerned about those as much. I was concerned about the prior to control date holdings.
Okay, but everyone's got their hands up, and I'm going to take them in the order that I have it. Mark Gibson, was your hand up?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Doug.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern was the same as has been expressed here before, that I would support this motion as an addition but not as a substitute, because I do want to keep alternative in. Do you want me to make a motion for you, or? Okay, I would make a motion to amend that this be an amendment as opposed to have it state to include an additional alternative in the Amendment 18 document.
You want to second that, Terry?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a need for further discussion? Mark?
I still haven't heard an explanation why this is different from Alternative 3 in the document.
Okay, it's an aggregate of all the PSC, as opposed to an individual stock limit. So the individual stock limit, it doesn't have one in there as of now. But it gives you some flexibility to balance your books, okay, as we ratchet down the ACLs on Flounders. It gives us some way to go and purchase a permit or something to get us some more Flounders without worrying about going over a individual stock cap. So That's the difference.
John.
The way I would explain it, if I'm understanding it correctly, is option three sets 15.5 for every single stock. Terry's amendment means you might go considerably over 15 in one stock. It really does treat it as a mixed fishery. So it is quite different. It's the aggregate that's 15. One stock, if you put all your eggs in one basket, might be quite a bit higher than 15%.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do support the amendments and the main motion as well. And we participate in a multi-species fishery at O'Hara's that has a similar program, and the caps in that program are on an aggregate basis. And if it were up to me and we didn't need a range of alternatives, I'd take out all the stock-specific alternatives here, because I just don't think that allows the fishery to operate well, and I support the motion.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Terry, for the clarification, John, too. I that makes a lot more sense. I'm concerned about what this leads to. If one person decides to target one stock, given the way our stocks mingle, if you get enough of quota for one stock, you, in essence, control access to all others. And I'm concerned about that. That is significant strategic power. Given that, I think this is probably one of the more I understand the need for flexibility as well, but that's what we also have the lease market for. This strikes me as one of the more lenient restrictions that are included in this document. I won't be voting for it.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my belief that the only reason to have these aggregate limits or any limits is to avoid controlling market power. I don't really see any other legitimate use for it, and in this I agree with both Terry and Mary Beth. And I strongly support the amended motion as an alternative that we need to consider. And there may be some downsides, as Matt has pointed out, but those will emerge in the analysis and in the public hearing. I think this needs to remain.
Because this is an amended amendment, are there any comments from the audience? Bonnie.
Bonnie Brady, Long Island Commercial Fishing Association. I just would like to know, in the amended motion, does that include Southern New England winter flounder? Because in two, it does not, because obviously it was allocated until fiscal year 2012.
Terry.
That would be all allocated stock money. So it would be Southern New England.
Aaron.
Aaron Doherty, Penobscot East Resource Center and manager of the Northeast Coastal Community Sector. I've heard a couple different comments about market power, and as it relates to this motion, I just want to make sure that committee members don't conflate market power specifically as defined by the Compass report with the broader objectives of Amendment 18, and I think Mike Sissonwine brought up that point. So I just think that we should be very clear about that, because market power is one component of considerations, but there's a lot more aspects to fleet diversity. And specifically in this motion, I think, you know, it does make sense to include an alternative that has an aggregate cap in some sense, but for the size that this is set at right now, I think this is a bit on the high side. I think that there should be alternatives that are more strict than that. I did have a question. Is there time for a question? So do we have in this document, I didn't see it, does it say anywhere what the current ownership is for aggregate PSC by either individuals or permit banks?
Rachel?
The only information is on an average basis, not a totaled basis. But I did yesterday go back and total it. So 15.5% would be a PSC of 1,500 divided by 15.5. The highest individual holds 140 currently, so that's not quite double. 15.5% would be not quite double the highest. current holdings.
Okay, thank you. And to that point, Mr. Chairman, the other point that I want to really drive home in any discussion about accumulation caps is that I think we're constraining our mindset and thinking specifically about how caps are going to affect people today, which, of course, is legitimate. But down the road, we expect that with strict ACLs, the stocks are going to increase. We need to think about whether it is valid for any one individual or entity in the future to own up to these caps and what that means for rebuilt stocks. And the ACLs are much larger. That means that translates to an allocation that is very large, and I think it would be helpful to provide that context and put some of that information in the document and show, you know, if we get up to 75% of our rebuilding target for some of these stocks, what does that amount of pounds of fish actually look like, and what might be appropriate revenue revenue projection off that given X vessel price. So I think that kind of information would make things a little bit more real because we're talking in the abstract right now. But general comments on this, I think that this percentage is a bit high. Thanks.
Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris Brown, Rhode Island Commercial Fishermen's Association and President of Northeast Fisheries Sector 5. It seems to be a reoccurring theme that the council and NERO continuously underestimate the authority and power within the sectors themselves. The possibility of someone accumulating ACE and acting out in such a way that was inconsistent with the overall tenor of everyone's opinion about what was good for the sector or the community, it's not going to happen. I can tell you without going into specifics that we have had incidents already where people have tried to exercise their access at a disproportionate rate to the rest of the community, and we stepped on it like a bug. We have some authority in this, and we want to continue exercising our authority, and I think a lot of the accumulation cap discussion is unnecessary. Thank you.
Maggie?
Thank you, Terry. I just have a clarification on some comments that were made about how accumulation limits address the council, the amendment's goals of fleet diversity. It was my understanding that the Compass Lexicon report either specifically said that accumulation limits was not a way to address fleet diversity, or they had to raise serious questions about how an accumulation limit would address fleet diversity. So if that idea is in folks' mind, that this is somehow going to address fleet diversity, you need to somehow spell that out exactly in the amendment, how that is going to do that, because I don't see how an accumulation cap addresses fleet diversity. Having said that, the document also does not define fleet diversity, so it's pretty hard to say how any of the management proposals in the document actually do address fleet diversity. And finally, since I have the microphone, I will take this opportunity also to say that it has been said many times by the agency within the Groundfish Committee discussion that putting accumulation limits on this fishery is a discretionary act by the council. It is not required by Magnuson. And certainly the council has the prerogative to consider accumulation caps and impose them, but I think it needs to be made clear to the public that it is not a requirement of the law, because this is not a LAP, and that it is discretionary. And because it is discretionary, I would argue that the rationale is that it needs to be at some higher level. Why are you doing this? Why are you proposing to do this? What is the goal? What are you trying to achieve with an accumulation limit, since it is not required by the law? Thank you.
Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. Just want to speak in favor of the motion, primarily because not just the 15.5 makes sense because it's borrowing on the Compass Lexicon report number, but it's the only alternative you would have that actually recognizes the multi-species fishery and the fact that probably the most important consolidation and fleet diversity protection that we have right now is keeping all the PSCs glued together in one permit. You can't separate them. So you can't go out like an ITQ and focus on one stock and have someone try to leverage the fishery. They have to buy, literally, that many permits to equal it, you know, and they're going to, so it's very difficult. And I think what this does is recognizes that. The other thing is if people ever looked at the PSCs on permits, they're almost all lopsided. In other words, you have very few balanced permits where they have 0.5% of every stock or a percent of every stock. People are heavy on one or two stocks in a permit and then real light on everything else. So this acknowledges that. Divestiture is a serious problem for businesses. We're trying to keep things stable in the fishery, and we're also recognizing the concern about if there's going to be someday some consolidation or concentration by some large company. If that's the fear, then look at it as a multi-species fishery. So we support this concept completely because it will get you out of a lot of those problems.
Okay. But Council, George.
Yeah, if the Council's concerned about the possibility under this alternative of having individual stocks become concentrated in ownership, I think you'd have the option of setting a higher cap for at the stock level, 15.5% aggregate and something higher. I don't know what it would be, 30%, 40%, 25%, whatever. But I think you have an option for second backstop if that's of significant concern to the council.
David.
Yeah, because it's been mentioned a couple of times, the Compass Lexicon report and the implications of that, I think it's important for us to reference, for those who have the copy, which I always carry with me now, page 6, where it states very specifically an important point that we tend to forget. They were very careful in this report to note that the regulation under consideration in our analysis, excessive share caps on fishery access privileges, addresses potential consolidation of the fishery, which has many potential social impacts, and then they describe some of those impacts. And then they say, these issues are important but are beyond the scope of our economic analysis of excessive share caps. So they didn't delve deep into the issues that many of us feel are very important because that was not their charge. They focused on market power. We're looking at fleet diversity, and the 15.5% is something they offered up as a suggestion for how to deal with that issue. Although, as I said before, others have indicated that 5% may be a better cap to deal with true fleet diversity issues. We don't have that in any of our options, so that's not going to be considered. So that's something to remember. The report is very useful, but it doesn't give us any specific direction as to fleet diversity and some of those important objectives we set for ourselves in this amendment.
Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly support this amendment, 15.5%. It seems to clearly be above the current level, the current maximum that exists, plus some opportunity for growth. So this gives a wider range of alternatives for public discussion and analysis. But just to return to something that Aaron said when he came up to the microphone, I don't know if I had a light bulb moment or just like an unfortunate way of thinking, but I got a bad mic here. Let me try this one. There we go. But I think he talked about what could happen in the future relative to stock growth and potentially stock contractions, and we certainly haven't been very good at predicting that, but it seems to me there's a possibility that as stock trajectories change over time in unforeseen ways, that any one of these alternatives could create unintended consequences, as depending on which one we select, where people are positioned, there could be great windfalls accrued as, you know, an upward stock trajectory, great losses incurred,
with a an unforeseen downward stock contraction, depending on who held what at what time and how these caps are arrayed. I'm not sure what to do about that at this point, but I think the absolute stock trajectories in the future are going to be important relative to the implications of these on a business by business basis. And we haven't contemplated any of that. There are no conditional alternatives saying that they're conditioned in some way on future stock status, which, as we know, is we lack in predictability of. But I think it's something to keep in mind. I guess all I'd suggest is that we keep eyes wide open in a wider range of possibilities here. And I'm attracted to what Chris Brown spoke about, that maybe we better not, better we think long and hard about these caps and the actual need for them, given the governance structure within the sectors, and not do some things that are real tight here that are going to have unforeseen consequences. Thank you.
Any final comments on the motion to amend? Rachel.
Clarification on the last line, PSC allocated to sectors. I'm wondering if you mean to exclude the common pool, the PSC that's in the common pool, or would you like to include that as well?
Terry?
Well, I mean, really, the common pool owns less than 1%, right? I mean, they hold. I don't know what the word is we're using today.
It's hold.
You'll know what I mean when I say own a hold. They own, they're less than 1-2% of the thing, right? Is that right? I guess somebody could jump out of the sector system, and I guess it would be, I was just trying to clarify that it was PSE in the sectors, but if somebody wants to, if you think we need to add common pool on there, that's fine with me.
Well, that would be my recommendation, since PSC is allocated to both sectors and common pool. However, if you want to not include the common pool in an accumulation limit, only apply the limit to the sectors, then keep the language as is.
Tom?
I think there's a fundamental difference here we have to keep in mind, that I'm trying to think how to word this. In the sector system, through the sector system, the sector can, that ACE is allocated to a specific sector, and the sector decides how that ACE is caught. The same is not true for a common pool. If you're a common pool vessel and you have 100% of the common pool ACE is attached to your PSC or as a result of your PSC, anybody in the common pool can fish for it. So how would you exercise any control over that fish? I mean, if you're going to have a common pool cap, it would seem like it would have to be something that you exercise control over, which would be the days at sea or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you'd cap someone in the common pool, but the analysis that we've provided to date combined all of the PSCs from sector and common pool together. So we'd have to, in the analysis, split that out.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to correct an earlier statement that I said. I do support the amended motion. I do not support the underlying motion.
You support the motion to amend? Okay. Frank.
Thank you. If somebody was holding the PSC and they're in a sector and they've jumped into the common pool, it's going to change everybody's allocation in the sector, depending on how much they hold. So I think unless you make it for the entire stock, you're going to have to change every time somebody jumps in and out of a sector on what their percentage is. If I'm right? Yeah, I think so. I think the same yes and some no.
Sorry, I think the way to address this is just to change that last word to permits, PSC allocated to permits. I think to address the issues that Frank brings up in terms of it constantly changing depending on enrollment from year to year, if you just change that, and I'd offer that perhaps as a friendly, if that makes sense, I think that's one way to fix this.
I mean, that makes sense. Let's do it and vote this up or down. Those support the motion to amend, please indicate so. It's unanimous, 17-0-0. Okay. Now we're on the motion. The motion to substitute has been amended, so we need to vote again. So same sign.
Those opposed? 15-2-0. Okay, we're good. Frank, you got a point of order, Dave?
Just to point something out, we didn't have any discussion regarding the suggestion made by Tom, and we need to be aware, I think, when we move forward with these, when the analyses are done, that this references permits, not individual persons. So it's got a different complexion now. Might complicate the analyses rather dramatically in terms of our comparing one option versus another.
Frank?
Okay. My understanding now that we have the full range of alternatives for accumulation limits in the document. So with that, we can move on to something else. Okay. Permit banks, page 85. Motion number 4, Karen. To treat permit banks the same way as any other permit holder or entity in terms of accumulation limits, and also move section 4.2 to considered but rejected section. The motion carried. The committee, 7-1-3.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. I'm going to go to the audience. Seeing no comments, back to the council. Terry?
Something Dave just said just struck me on that last one, and I'm wondering, after we finish with this, Terry, if we can go back to, and have Dave repeat what he said, so that I just want to clarify what my intention then was.
Okay, to the motion on the board, though. David?
Yeah, okay. I guess I'm going to look to the audience on this for some help, because at this point in time, we have, if I understand correctly, a permit bank that is within a sector. So if we adopt this, does it mean that can no longer happen? I'm unsure of the implications for that current permit bank in a sector. So.
Tom.
To that point, I think the discussion at the committee level and at the AP was just to treat private permit banks like any other permit holder or entity, and so they would be able to hold permits and roll them in a sector or keep them in the common pool as they wished. I don't think this motion would get to that. With that said, we had a pretty lengthy conversation about this at the committee meeting. I thought the GAP recommendation was generally a pretty good one, and I think there was a lot of support for this kind of approach. If we're not going to have permit banks with a higher limit, then we can avoid some of the thornier issues about the definition and just treat them like everybody else.
Terry?
I'm going to basically say the same thing Tom said. I mean, I thought at the committee we had a lot of discussion and decided that a permit bank is basically a person or entity. And so.
Okay, this is the last time I'm going to go to the audience after I call for audience comments. So I see Steve and Bonnie, and after every motion we make, we go to the audience directly, and then we come back to the council for a debate. So,
thank you, Terry. Steve Welch. I'm just curious, would this, if we have a buyback or a buyout, would permit banks be allocated fish? That's my question. Do you understand?
Darn good one. I don't know the answer. George, you're the answer man. And you're gone in a couple of weeks, so
it's probably better, right, John, at answer this, but I think we don't know yet, would be my answer.
The certainly in the discussions on disaster, a buyout is one of the things under discussion. Who knows where we'll end up, and whether or not an establishment of or funding of permit banks would be one of the outcomes. It's really premature. And what the impact would be if this were to pass on permit banks. It's pretty hard to answer that question, so I'm not going to.
Okay, last call. Jim, and then we're going coming back to the council. We're going to vote this up or down.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. I had actually hoped to get through an entire council meeting without coming to the table to comment, but John just raised an interesting point, or actually it was raised with the question about would that money be allowed. If that were to be the case, I would like to ask the question or point out the fact that we need to consider if that is the case and that money is used to purchase permits, who would own the rights to that? Whose money is that? And I think that needs to be pretty well determined before something like that is adopted. And that leads me into my final comment on this. I had thought this for quite a period of time, and I probably should have said it sooner. And I know a lot of people have spoken about it, but not so much before the council. This issue, which I agree with, I believe there needs to be caps and safeguards for consolidation and so it doesn't exceed limits and what should be fair to most people. But this should have been done prior to sectors. This is something that should have been considered, like we've done in other fisheries. Tile fishery, for example, was a fishery that went through the same process where it was allocated to very few people, but accumulation limits and issues that were dealt with prior to a process that it took us into something like sectors. And now we are here with people holding vast amounts of permits, and you're going to take from them? I'm not quite sure that's the American way. Maybe the right thing to do, but look how you're doing it. So, like I say, I think the council was very remiss at that point. And thank you for taking that part.
PK?
Yeah, this is not in opposition. I'm fine with this motion. Just a clarification, because I'm trying to keep things straight in my head. 5.3.1, to me, I thought that dealt with the limitations on permit banks. So I just want to make sure we're I've got it under section on page 85, like Frank said, which is 6.5.11.1.2. So I just want to make sure we're just not striking something out that we should be, or make sure I'm looking at the right thing.
Rachel?
And we're looking on discussion document. Page 85 is the affected environment section, and this gives a background information about section 6.5.11 gives background information for what a state-operated permit bank is, the definition, and then gives a summary of the non-profit permit bank activity that was a PDT memo from last summer. So the actual measures are in on page 45 of the document. The committee... It was section 4.2 at the committee meeting, but since the committee moved to reject those alternatives and it wasn't an alternative put in by the council, it got moved to the considered but rejected section. So it's actually section on page 45 that we're considering, 5.3.1. We have the definition of a nonprofit permit bank, alternative 1 and 2. And then on page 48, we also have limiting the holdings of permit banks collectively as another alternative for rejection.
No, I thank you for the clarification. I see it now. Thank you.
Okay, any final comments? Seeing none, those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 17-0-0. Frank?
Okay, under that same, if anybody wants to look at slide 15, we don't have a formal definition of a permit bank or entity. The council may want to define entity in Amendment 18. We don't have a motion from the committee.
So you're asking the council to do this on the fly or remand it back to the committee, which would be my suggestion, because we could spend the rest of the morning doing it. Unless Terry's got a good idea.
Well, I thought at the committee, Frank, we decided that we were going to treat all the permit banks the same as any other owner or holder, that we wouldn't define them. Isn't that what we decided, that we wouldn't define them at all, Rachel?
Okay. So we're all set. Okay.
Never mind.
We're good. Moving on. Page 35, U.S. Canada. Motion number 6. To recommend to the council to include in Amendment 18 within the U.S.-Canada Trading Measures, Section 4.2, Section 4.2.2, in-season trades for U.S.-Canada stocks with Alternative 2, Option B as the preferred, allows in-season trades of Sector ACE. And this motion carried the committee 8-0-0.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Comments from the audience? Okay, I see no comments from the audience. Back to the council. Seeing none. Seeing David raise his hand.
Bear with me because we're moving quickly, which is important. Let's see. The motion is for us to support alternative 2, option B as preferred, allow in-season trades of sector ACEs. All right. So this would therefore mean that with any trade that is done, an individual sector would have to, or sectors would have to, take the initiative to work with the regional administrator to give up a sector share of a stock, let's say Haddock, in exchange for Canadian yellowtail, for example. And that yellowtail would then go to that particular sector that gave up, or sectors that gave up its Haddock. Is that what this alternative 2 as preferred would do?
Rachel, can you provide some clarity?
I believe you're correct that a sector would propose, or a group of sectors would propose a trade to the regional office. And then those specific sectors would benefit from the result of that trade.
Okay. Then I would move to substitute alternative 2, option B as the preferred. It would be alternative 2, option A as preferred, which is allow the in-season trades of sector sub-ACL.
Is there a second?
For those who may not, well, I have to wait for a second, I guess.
Is there a second to this motion? Second by Doug.
If I may, my preference is, and I think the council's preference would be, since this is a trade of fish between the U.S. and the Canadians, that whatever is traded for example, yellowtail for haddock or whatever, assuming a trade would ever be supported by the Canadians, that it should then come to the U.S. and be distributed according to the existing formula we use for allocating to everyone. In other words, I don't believe that we should be favoring one sector over another or allowing one sector to make the trade that potentially would disadvantage another sector who wouldn't be involved in those discussions. This is complicated as to who is going to actually work with the regional administrator to make any trade. So that's why I prefer option A instead of option B.
I have one comment before we debate this indefinitely. Do we need a preferred alternative? Send them both out to the public. Tom.
Well, that was going to be my comment. It's somewhat unusual for the council to select preferred alternatives at this stage before the alternatives have been analyzed.
In that case, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that my motion would be to amend and that we would just strike out any reference to preferred alternative.
Terry.
Then why even have the motion at all? Do we even need the motion?
I think we've gone far enough. I mean, it probably would make the most sense just to vote it down.
Okay.
And then we'd stand in our document to have both options A and B to go out in the package. Does that make sense to everyone? Okay. So I guess since we've had the motion to amend, we need to vote on that first, and then we'll vote on the main motion if it gets amended. Tom, you have a question?
Just a suggestion for the confusion. Maybe we could withdraw the motion to amend and follow the rest of the course you outlined.
You okay, David?
That was going to be my suggestion. Okay. So, yes, we withdraw the motion.
Okay, the motion to amend has been withdrawn, and we're going to vote on the main motion. Those who...
The main motion is preferred.
Is there an objection to withdraw the main motion? Okay.
So is the main motion withdrawn as well? Or
no, I think we have to vote it down. Okay, if that's the council's intent. So those who support the main motion, underlying motion on the board, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. The motion, and those who are abstaining. The motion fails 0-1-15. Okay, we're on. Frank, we're quite a pair here. Jamie.
I just want to make sure that it's clear. So these measures will stay in the document. You're not selecting preferred. It's not that you're taking something out of the document. Okay.
That is correct.
Okay. Those are the easy ones. Okay. Next, hand gear A fishery measures. Karen, do you have the one in italics? No. Let me just make sure Karen's got this. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. Within hand gear A permit fisheries alternative 2, section 4.3.2, to recommend that the council include option F, removal of the March 1 to 20 closure, option H, removal of the standard tote requirement, and move all other options to consider but rejected, and include adding the VMS exemption for hand gear A permits to the list of possible section exemptions. This is a little different than the committee motion, so we'll need a second.
Okay.
And this is on page 38. Sorry.
Is there a second to this motion? Somebody. PK. Okay. I think it's essentially the same.
It's essentially the same thing. It's just very little difference.
You've coupled the consensus statement
correct.
Into it. Okay. So this is essentially the committee motion with a consensus statement added into it. Okay. Committee motion, or not a committee motion, but an amended committee motion. I'm going to take comments from the audience.
Mark Stettner, Northeast Hook Fishermen's Association. This does nothing to preserve the traditional 400-year-old hand gear fishery. We are against this for many reasons. Amendment 18, one of the primary things is diversified fleet and different gear types, and this doesn't do what the public in the public comments in the past 3 years have been telling time and time again that we need more than this to preserve a very traditional fishery, and we're asking that the council not support this. Thank you.
Frank?
Yeah, Mark, before you, I just want to make sure, I believe you probably support the majority of this motion. What you're objecting to is the considered and rejected, I mean, to move to...
I'm sorry. Let me clarify. Yes, you're saying the vote is to move this to consider and reject it.
No.
Okay.
The vote here will be to remove the tote, get rid of the block, and to add the VMS exemption, and to take the other things to...
That language is not in the motion.
Well, it is if you read...
So could you help Karen out? It's in the consensus statement.
Okay, sorry about that.
Did you want to have her insert that?
Right. Karen, I'm sorry, after it should say move all other options to consider but rejected. And
I'll go help her.
All right. Give that one. Sorry.
Okay. We need those other options.
But you support the ones that are here so far?
We support some of them, but we really need the other options. Okay. Thank you.
Other comments from the audience?
Tim Ryder, Northeast Hook Fishermen's Association. We need the other options as well. Thank you.
Any other audience members? Come on up.
Hi, Carl Day, Northeast Hand Gear Association. And yes, we do need all the other options added. Thank you.
Is there anybody else from the audience you'd like to? Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern is not with the other options. My concern is the contemplation of removal or being exempt from having to carry a VMS. I don't think we should be going forward sanctioning fisheries in federal waters, given the trend towards accountability and certainty and accuracy. Everybody going to fish in federal waters needs to have a VMS.
Any other comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Tom.
Yeah, the committee and actually this council have gone back and forth on this for a while. I think this motion strikes a pretty good balance in terms of providing, you know, some flexibility and alternatives that would try to help achieve some of the objectives we have for this segment of the fleet. The committee's conversation was focused primarily on the difficulty and feasibility and the value of setting up a third parallel fishery within the groundfish fishery. Currently, we have the common pool and sectors, and you know some of these other options would result in a third approach, and we weighed the pros and cons of doing that. And I think we've tried to strike a balance. And let's provide some opportunities here, but we can't create a third wing of the groundfish fishery. So that's, I think, where we got to with this motion at the committee level.
Doug.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a motion to substitute, and if Karen could put it up on the board, it'll be a motion that I think Dr. Pierce is envious of because of the size.
You're out of order.
But it does fit up on the... would you like me to read it, or would you like me to break it into sections for you? As
your penalty for this creating this motion is you have to read it.
Okay. There we go. So to move to substitute to revise the Amendment 18 document under Section 4.3.2, Alternative 2, Option A, Hand Gear A Permit, Sub ACL, add the following option. Holders of Hand Gear A permits may elect to enroll in the Hand Gear A fishery, the common pool or sector, the PSC, from the Hand Gear A permits would contribute to whichever sub-ACL their permit is enrolled in. Those electing to enroll in the Hand Gear A fishery would be limited to fishing in a single broad stock area for fishing for the fishing year and must declare which stock area they are going to fish in at the beginning of the year. Option B, other fishery component, add the following sub-options. Account for the catch of other stocks within the other fishery components of the sub-ACL. Another sub-option that would calculate an annual assumed discard rate for the Hand Gear A fishery and subtract that from the Hand Gear A sub-ACL. For Gulf of Maine cod, Georges Bank cod, Gulf of Maine haddock, Georges Bank haddock, and pollock, and the other fishery components sub-ACL for all other stocks. A third sub-option, assume all discards from trip limits within the Hand Gear A fishery to be de minimis and not count for them against any sub-ACL. This option would require the de minimis discards to be explicitly considered within the management uncertainty of the fishery. Option C, revise and add two sub-options. Under this option, a proactive accountability measure would be established for the Hand Gear A fishery to prevent overages. Proactively, trip limits for each stock allocated in the sub-ACL will be set in specifications by the regional administrator to prevent overage. And the two sub-options would be, first of all, when 100% of the Hand Gear A sub-ACL is reached for a stock, the Hand Gear A fishery for that stock would close and all vessels fishing under the Hand Gear A fishery would be subject to a zero possession limit for that stock for the remainder of the fishing year. The second sub-option would be when 90% of the Hand Gear A sub-ACL is reached for a stock, the Hand Gear A fishery for that stock would close and all vessels fishing under the Hand Gear A fishery would be subject to a zero possession limit for the stock for the remainder of the fishing year. Option D, retroactive accountability measures. Add two sub-options. First sub-option would be retroactive accountability measure would be triggered if the hand gear A fishery sub-ACL is exceeded. The second sub-option would be reactive AMs would be triggered if the hand gear A fishery sub-ACL and the total ACL are exceeded. And the final part of this is that there would be no changes to options E through J, which are currently in the discussion document. And if I get a second to this, I'll provide justification.
Seconded by David Pierce.
Thank you. Can I take a glass of water here?
You've just created a whole new rule, Doug.
At our January council meeting, we did approve unanimously a motion to bring these concepts forward for inclusion and analysis in Amendment 18. And the PDT provided some fairly good analysis and provided a range of options within their work to try and address that motion. I appreciate the Ground Fish Committee's work on this and appreciate their attempt to try and come up with something that would accommodate the needs of the hand gear A fishermen but without creating a sub a specific sub ACL for them. But I think it's pretty clear that this is something for this fishery that's the smallest of the smalls needs. Sectors right now, the vast majority of permit holders are within sectors. Some of them reluctantly, but they are in sectors, and it does work for them. In the case of hand gear A permits, the vast majority are still in the common pool, and they're finding that that's very difficult to work in because they're mixed in with many other gear types. And those, the catches of the other gear types are affecting their ability to effectively utilize their fishery. Right now, as the PDT analysis indicates, there are 20 permits within sectors. In those sectors, there's only one of them fishing. The rest are leasing, and that's fine. You know, that's what those people have chosen to do. But there's not an active fishery other than the one permit going on in sectors. Of the 83 in the common pool, 21 are fishing right now. But again, they are struggling, as we all are, or what many of the vessels are, to be able to work within the common pool. So what I would like to do, what I've included in here, is essentially the options that were in the document that were put together. I've made some adjustments to it based on some of the comments from the PDT of things that were not that may not be able to move forward. You know, there was a concern that they had expressed about, you know, if we just said that all hand gear A permits would have to be in the sub-ACL, and then you'd have, it wouldn't have a choice within this. And so one of the sub-options that they provided was that they could choose to be in the common pool of the sector or the hand gear A fishery. And so I've modified A to provide that choice. Also, within the hand gear A's, you need to deal with that other subcomponent. That subcomponent, as we've seen from some previous work, is very, very tiny. It's all less than 0.5% of the other fishery subcomponents of the various stocks that wouldn't be allocated. So I provided... there were three options that the PDT developed in their March 21st document, and I've included them in there for consideration in this amendment. One of the things that I heard from this council at the last meeting when we were dealing with this was that they needed accountability measures. And so I provided some sub-options to the both the proactive and reactive accountability measures in this motion, so that they will have proactive accountability measures. One of the things that was in the proactive accountability measures under the PDT document was that they didn't think that the once the trip limits are set, it would be very difficult for the regional office to be able to modify those trip limits in season the way they currently are doing for the common pool. So I've taken that particular option out. You just set a trip limit at the beginning of the season via the specifications, and then added in the two options that the PDT recommended, which was that they would be the fishery for those stocks would close at either when the sub-ACL was, it was projected that it would be either 90 or 100% of the sub-ACL would be closed. And then the reactive accountability measures, again, I took two sub-options that were developed by the PDT and included that in there. I didn't change any of the other alternatives, and they also are the ones that were supported by the counts by the committee here and recommended by the committee are in items E through J. So I hope we will move forward to including this for analysis and let it get out to public hearing, regardless of how you feel about some of these options. And I think it's important that we at least give the this a chance to be included.
Okay, I suspect this is going to take some council debate time. So what I'm going to do is go to the audience, and we'll get the audience comments. We're going to hear from Dr. Rothschild, take lunch, and then come back and debate the motion. So, Mark.
Mark Stetner, Northeast Hook Fishing Association. I want to thank Doug for really taking the time to look at this and the other council members that may have participated in the discussions. We're at the cusp here. There was, years ago, hundreds of handgear fishermen, and due to regulations, we have the fastest declining gear fishery in the ground fishery. It's very disturbing to me that there's 100-plus handgear limited access permits and only 19 or 20 actively ground fishing when over 100 qualified. That's a huge drop in this fishery, more so than any other gear type. What this may look like a lot, but it's really very simple when it boils down to it. It preserves the history of the handgear fishery for the future. Not for me, not from people fishing right now. 10 years out, 20 years out, if nothing is done, this fishery is gone, and Amendment 18 is supposed to protect small boats and different gear types. That's what this does, and that's what how we really would like to see this move forward into the document for an environmental impact statement and for a really good, genuine public comment. Thank you very much.
Other comments from the audience? Peter.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. We also support this amendment and appreciate Mr. Grout's work. I think he has addressed all the issues, and I think the document without a set of alternatives like this does not really meet the scope or respond to a lot of the comments that we received. So we hope the council approves this. Thank you.
Any other comments? Come on up.
Tim Ryder, I just wanted to reiterate I'm a hand gear fisherman as well. And the reason I'm here to support this as well, just because it is, the climate is so difficult for us right now, and it's about the future.
We are a sustainable fishery, and many of us are hanging on by a thread. And, I mean, that's why I drove down from Maine today. I know many other people are here from other places as well, but it's something moving forward to help us in the future. I've lived here my whole life and fished here my whole life with my bare hands, and that's what I believe in, and that's why I'm here. Thank you.
You have a question? Yeah. Laura.
I just had a question that before we dispense of it and carry it over lunch when we have so much else to do, is whether the agency has a response to whether this is doable or not. So before we debate everything, I'd love to know what the agency thought is about setting up a third fishery. And just finally, I just want to say I made some negative comments about government efficiency, and Doug Grout, you are really upholding your office, and you did a ton of work, and you really should be applauded. So thank you.
So before we go to George, let's see if there's any more comments from the audience. Back to, seeing none, back to George.
I'm going to have Mike address this more specifically, but just in general, I think we've told the committee that we have some concerns about this in terms of being able to monitor it in a real-time manner, because the quotas would be so small, the allocations would be so small, there'd be likelihood that it could go over and we wouldn't know about it. It's not impossible to monitor, but it would be difficult to monitor, and the risk of getting it wrong, I think, are relatively high. But Mike, if you want to add some more technical,
I think it's just within some of the subcomponents that are included, and I think the PDT struggled with these as well. For example, under option C, the sub option to close when we reach 90% of the sub ACL, that might be very challenging, just in terms of the data timeliness. The other is with the accountability measures. It's certainly necessary to have accountability measures, but we don't know that we would be able to manage a fishery of this magnitude with a great deal of precision. And so if they're held to their just to their sub-ACL for accountability, we might expect that they would go over on a regular basis. So that's why I think it's the PDT we recommended that it be tied into the total ACL as well as their sub-ACL. So there are some components within the sub-options that remain to be significant concerns, I think, for the agency, and would be significant challenges on implementation for a fishery of this magnitude.
Okay. Thanks for the consult. We're going to – you have a question, Mark?
Terry, would it be possible for Karen to email this out to the council members? It spans several screens. Can't see it all.
Karen, can you be able to do that? Thank you. You have a question, Ellen?
I just a point of clarification. In the document, it refers to hand gear A permits, and Doug, your motion just says hand gear permits, and I know there's also a hand gear B permit. Is that a mistake, or? Or are we talking about hand gear A and B?
Certainly hand gear A. I mean, I was following the most of the references here I thought were to hand gear A. It talks about the hand gear permit sub ACL. That was simply a title that's in the document.
Okay.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Okay. Vincent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had two concerns. One is the monitoring of the fishery.
Before we debate this,
we're not going to debate. This is more of a question. And then just on option B, part three, sub option D, when it comes to discards, can we approve anything that makes discards unaccountable?
Gene. Option D.
So what's the question? Whether, I mean, that's the thing we have to, you know, that's part of the analysis of this and what effect it has. I mean, is he asking whether we, let's see, what is, not that from, where is it up there on the?
Option C.
assume all discards from the trip fishing within the... If the analysis supports it, yes.
Okay, well, let's hold that thought till after lunch. Dr. Rothschild.
Thanks for... Yeah.
Excuse me, Dr. Rothschild, just to get people oriented a little bit. Trying to find a specific letter. We received a letter from Dr. Rothschild, which is in your binder. I'm trying to locate it right now. Just to try and refer you to where it is. Document number 10. I think it's under groundfish. There's actually two items.
That's the executive.
Right, I'm sorry. Document number 9. You're right. It's document number 9 that he's addressing. Thank you.
Should I proceed, or you?
Yeah, no, you're all. Tom just wanted to refer everyone to your letter, so please proceed.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm Brian Rothschild. I'm representing the Center for Sustainable Fisheries. I appreciate very much the council listening to our presentation. The status of groundfish stocks in New England is shrouded in considerable uncertainty. This uncertainty often raises the question as to whether stocks that are claimed to be overfished are actually overfished or vice versa. Uncertainty in this determination reflects in turn whether management regulations intended to correct these characterizations are effective. Furthermore, whether the declines in stock relate to fishing and are therefore reversible, or whether they owe to the environment and would not be responsive to changes in fishing intensity is not known. There's no doubt that a resolution of these uncertainties could yield benefits worth of the order of hundreds of millions of dollars. It is our view that this costly uncertainty owes to insufficiency in basic data on the abundance of stock and their life history. It is our belief that experimental, cooperative, adaptive fishing programs will materially contribute to the data and information pool, thereby considerably reducing the uncertainties associated with current management advice. This assertion is supported by past work on scallops and more recent studies on the Georges Bank yellowtail flounder. For the Georges Bank yellowtail flounder stock, biomass estimates obtained through mathematical virtual population analysis amount to about 800 tons. Yet direct estimates of abundance, actually counting fish using swept area measurements, yielded estimates that had a lower bound of 4,000 tons. In other words, the direct measurements provided estimates that were at least 5 times greater than the mathematical estimates. Recognizing the yellowtail flounder as an opportunity for the Secretary of Commerce to demonstrate the usefulness of experimental fishing programs, and that yellowtail VPA assessment did not represent the dynamics of the stock, and increased harvesting of the underfished yellowtail could not, I'm speaking of Georges Bank yellowtail, of course, could not only provide information but income to an economically challenged industry. We proposed to the Secretary on January 13th an experimental fishery to achieve these goals. We received a reply to our January 13th letter on March 26th from Assistant Administrator Sobeck denying our request. We felt that additional information would have helped the administrator. Our statement today is intended to provide additional information for Administrator Sobeck and directly request the Council and the Fisheries Service to work with us to help put finishing touches on the details of a proposed experimental fishery which would not only provide additional data on yellowtail, but on other stocks as well. In her March 26 reply, Administrator Sobeck pointed out that although information used for management advice requires further analysis, an experimental fishery could not be approved. She said, an experimental fishery that would operate outside the established catch limits would result in overfishing and further strain the vulnerable stock. She further said that CSF concerns should be minimized because NMFS was working on a new alternative empirical approach to improve management advice. She said that the new empirical approach would provide the best advice on stock abundance. Regarding whether the experimental fishery would operate outside established stock limits, this past year the commercial fishery took roughly 100 tons less than its quota. I have the actual numbers in the paper. Put another way, a scenario that involved an additional 100 tons would not overfish, that is, not exceed the quota. Provide more data, provide more than adequate sampling of the stocks, begin to provide enough data for ecosystem management, provide a better understanding of the ocean environment vis-a-vis the yellowtail and other species, and enable new and valuable insights to the management related to fishing dynamics of the fleet. It is important to point out as well that such a scenario where harvesting a magnitude of the fish that is close to its quota has an overall benefit, since the bycatch of Georges Bank yellowtail by the scallop fleet would be reduced substantially. So there's not only benefits for yellowtail, there's benefits for scallops. Regarding whether the vulnerable stock, are her words, would be strained, again, that's her words. It is true that the abundance of the stock is less than it was in the 1960s and 1970s. However, it needs to be pointed out that it is an assumption that the yellowtail would increase by a factor more than 10 back to the 60s and 70s if all fishing on Georges Bank yellowtail was stopped. In fact, in its present setting, the yellowtail does not seem responsive to changes in fishing intensity. If we believe this assumption, we would expect that if we stopped fishing, all stocks would increase to their historical maximum abundance at the same time. It's like watching the Kentucky Derby and seeing all the horses finish at exactly the same time. You would have all winners. This does not make sense. So it might not be that the yellowtail is vulnerable or strained. Maybe it is a normal level of abundance given the current environment. Certainly the observed length-weight relationship for yellowtail flounder did not decline from fishing, but it may have declined from a lack of food, for example, because the stock, even though it was at a low level, was too abundant for its food resource. Regarding whether the new empirical approach provides the best advice on stock abundance is not yet clear. Of course, we have not received the final report as yet, but we have read the working papers and the summary of the meeting. We would expect that the empirical approach would provide us the best guess of the biomass of yellowtail, along with confidence intervals and a discussion of the statistical difficulties inherent in the swept area surveys. There's considerable discussion of the wings versus the door swept area. Regarding the biomass, it seems that the empirical estimates are between 4 and 11,000 tons. As pointed out above, at its lowest bound, the 4-ton estimate is 5 times greater than the biomass estimated by the VPA stock assessment as adjusted. Having set the stage with a reasonable approximation of the biomass, we next need to determine the reference points that tell us the proportion of the 4 tons that can be harvested. It is important to recognize that it is not one single golden reference point. There are whole families of reference points. Each family stems from different branch of theory, and for each branch of theory, reference points take on different magnitudes, even though they are based on identical data sets. For example, reference points can be created from yield per recruit, FX percent, or production models. These will generally all give different results depending on choices made by an analyst. So as a matter of opinion, as to whether the yellowtail flounder is overfished or how close the magnitude of the stock is to being overfished. Should the Council consider only one opinion on the reference point, or does it have several that it can consider, and what criterion should be used to select a particular reference point that shows whether or not the stock is overfished, and what choices are made of parameter values to be used in the determination of reference points. In particular, choices for M and FX percent reference points are critical. M and X in FX percent are points that are chosen. In other words, they're arbitrary. Decreasing X from, say, 40 to 35% will give a more favorable impression of the state of the stock. A new feature of the data presented in the empirical workshop is an acknowledgement that the value of M that has been used is set too low. The value of X that is used for the yellowtail is 40, but on the West Coast for flounders it is 35. What's the reason for this? The report from the workshop expresses considerable uncertainty regarding yellowtail movement, distribution, natural mortality, productivity, catchability, absolute biomass, etc. All of this concurs with our assertion made in our January 13th letter that relatively little is known about the yellowtail flounder for management purposes, and this, of course, generates the magnitude of the buffer. The reason that so little is known is that there is insufficient data, and the only way to obtain a critical mass of data is through intensive sampling that can only be implemented via a cooperative program with the fishing fleet. A key issue in establishing an experimental fishery is facilitating elimination of underfishing and harvesting a quantity of fish that is close to the quota. We expect that we will find a scenario similar to the current year. Fishermen do not want to go over the yellowtail quota and be constrained from catching yellowtail and other stocks on Georgia's Bank. In other words, processing a high amount of yellowtail quota is a ticket to other profitable catches on Georgia's Bank. The ticket has a high value when the quota is not used up and zero value when the quota is used up. A particular case in point is that the yellowtail bycatch is an important constraint on haddock landings. One could further envision on a longer-term basis that the quota is approached, fishermen refrain from catching yellowtail because they do not know the current catch level vis-a-vis the quota. Something like a mixed stock exception is needed. The fishery would be carefully monitored so that the quota is not exceeded. Considerable data would be obtained using swept area techniques for estimating yellowtail data, considering both biomass and rate of removal. In the cooperative program, crew members would be assigned to record toe-by-toe catches, provided invaluable information on multiple stock composition needed for ecosystem-based management. We have some experience in this, and it worked very well. Naturally, budget issues arrive. However, in this case, it is more important at the outset to discuss the desirability of this program rather than its budgetary feasibility, because once we decide on the desirability and it's positive, we can look for budget resources. Discussions with industry lead us to believe at this point that they would work together with this program. Of particular interest is that the Secretary appears to have emergency authorities to implement such a program. We believe that these authorities are enhanced by the declaration that the fishery is a disaster. Upon declaring a fishery disaster, the Secretary has broad authority to alleviate the disaster by taking any activity that the Secretary determines is appropriate to restore the fishery or prevent a similar failure in the future and to assist a fishing community affected by such a fishery. The MSA also authorizes the Secretary to implement any information collection program if the Secretary determines that additional information is necessary for developing, implementing, and monitoring a fishery management plan. I would conclude by saying that CSF is hopeful that the Council will find that the experimental fishery that we have proposed is a useful framework for the Council and NOAA, and that it engages in developing a new and innovative approach to fishery management that combines actual fishing with data collection and management advice. We are confident that the technical expertise that exists in New England can flesh out this next step toward managing the ecosystem in which our multiple species stock resides. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Rothschild, for all the work that you do, for your proposal and for coming to Mystic today. The executive committee met last week and spent a fair amount of time discussing your letter, and we had some concerns. And I'm going to summarize them to the council before I open it up for council comments. The first concern we had was that the request had already been disapproved by the AA. We weren't sure if any information, new information would be available that would lead us to expect a different result. We were concerned that the EFP, any EFP that exceeds catch limits was probably illegal, and we would have a hard time justifying that. It also wasn't clear that this situation meets the criteria for emergency action. While it's an economic emergency, the Georgia's Bank Yellowtail quota is not the result of a recent unforeseen event or recently discovered circumstance. And the fourth issue was many of the details of the proposal were vague. And for example, how would the observers be paid for? And it wasn't clear when the EFP, if approved, would begin. Early summer is really a poor time for targeting yellowtail due to their spawning behavior. So those were some of the concerns we had. And I'd like to open it up to probably start off with. Please.
All right, thank you. First of all, we know it was disapproved, but we don't think that the information that we provided today was taken into account. Second, the limits may be illegal, but if we're underfishing a yellowtail by a considerable amount, at least 100 tons, then there are opportunities to do that within the present setting. And three, there is opportunity for the secretary to look at the law more broadly and take into account the economic aspects. And as far as the observer being paid for, that's a very good point. And as I said, if people think that this program is desirable, then this is something that we need to think through. Thank you. Do you want me to stay here? Or?
Yes, please. Comments, Mark.
Yeah, I couldn't determine from the letter actually what's going to be done relevant to improving yellowtail stock assessment. I understand there's a request for an experimental fishery, but is there going the intent to be a swept area absolute estimate of biomass? Is there going to be depletion fishing done? Is the objective to increase the sampling intensity for size age composition? And I really can't determine, other than if somebody's going to go out and catch a bunch of fish, what's going to be done and how that's going to bear on the stock assessment, in particular augment the empirical approach that's already going on.
other comments?
Do you want me to answer that?
No. We probably better, time-wise, just not go point counterpoint. I'd like to hear from council thoughts first. David.
Yeah, Brian, thanks for all your input. As always, you're creative with your approach. As you know, SMAS has been doing some work with the fishing industry regarding video survey work. And my understanding is that is going to be, that was reviewed, that work was reviewed last week. The proposal that you've offered up, would it involve video work as well, or is that work independent of what is being done now through SMAS, working with the industry and that video work?
Please answer him.
Thank you. I sort of feel like you're in a different country or something like that. You're so far away. Anyhow, first to Mark's point is, as you know, Mark, there's a consensus, I believe, that the VPA approach isn't working. The swept area approach looks promising, so that the present The idea would be to rely heavily on the swept area approach. You did mention removal experiments. That wasn't mentioned, but the Delury technique makes a lot of sense for this approach. And there are new statistical methods that would facilitate that analysis. So I hope that gets to your point. In terms of video work and SMAST, I'm no longer at SMAST. I know that Kevin Stokesbury is working with an innovative approach that was developed in Norway where instead of actually catching the fish, you leave the cod end of the net open and you have a camera, so you're counting the fish going through and so you don't harm or catch the fish. And so I see what this proposal is a proposal to engage in cooperative research on these problems with industry. It's a proposal to increase materially the number of samples, but it's also a proposal for people to come together and plan this activity. The Center for Sustainable Fisheries is not planning on being engaged in this. We want to see it happen because we think it's the right thing to do. We think that basically not taking data from fishing boats is not the best approach to conduct stock assessment, and that's what we're proposing.
Okay, I've got Ellen, John Quinn, John Bullard, then we're going to see if there's a motion.
Thank you, Dr. Rothschild. And I know this is not the optimum solution, but my question to you is, have you considered a leasing the PSC that for the yellowtail that you might need for your experiments?
We've thought of that, but frankly, we want to make sure that people like the idea, and then we would like the industry and those affected to come forward and decide how to implement it.
John.
Yep. Thank you very much, Doctor, and I first want to acknowledge our long-time friendship and collaboration over many, many years, and I'd love the opportunity to work with you and your team trying to get an opportunity to continue to contribute to this. I just wonder, this word collaboration seems to be more and more of a buzzword at the council level, at the federal level, and whether as this federal disaster money unfolds, there may be an opportunity to get some funding with the proposal tweaked to fit within the existing Magnuson-Stevenson Act requirements and restrictions. So I offer my support trying to go through that with you, and hopefully we can somehow collaborate to figure out a way that some of this important information can get back to us.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's what we'd like to work on. Collaboration at the end of the day means sharing resources because otherwise it's not meaningful. And so you need a shared resources between the agency, the industry, various groups interested in this because there's little doubt, I think, that anybody could have that increased data collection on this complex multiple species fishery would yield tremendous positive results. I mean, like we wouldn't have a disagreement as to whether there's 800 tons or 4,000 tons of yellowtail if we had data collection of this magnitude.
John Bullard.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Rothschild. I was going to mention the application that Dr. Rothschild made to Secretary Pritzker, but Dr. Rothschild already made reference to it. And the response given by Eileen Sobeck is also in people's packet. But it was that application made to the Secretary of Commerce was declined, and as Brian quoted, we can't grant your request for rulemaking for the type of experimental yellowtail flounder fishery. It would operate outside the established catch limits, would result in overfishing and further strain this vulnerable stock. And as Brian said, he was encouraged to work with the Science Center as they work, as this council is well aware, on this empirical approach. So there's no question we want to look at the issues around yellowtail flounder science, and the Center for Sustainable Fisheries is well aware of that. I think there are a couple of normal channels. EFPs are things that we receive requests for on a routine basis, and you know, that would be one normal channel. And the other is, as this council debated, I think it was this week, it seems like ages ago, the Research Steering Committee set up priorities, and I was just looking through the report whether or not the idea presented in this letter falls within those four priorities. But that is something I'm trying to think. Does it... Well, that was one of the priorities, but yellowtail, was that one of the...
Not really.
Not really. So we went about a basis of setting up research priorities. That's the way we should do it, right? Set up priorities that we think are suitable for pursuit, and then go out and ask people, can you meet the priorities that we think are important? And that's the way I think we should go about figuring out how to do cooperative research. And so those are normal channels.
Terry.
I was just kind of curious if you had, there must be few fellows around New Bedford that have a particular interest in yellowtails that must have some quota. I was just wondering if maybe you had talked to somebody about maybe using their own quota to go out and do the experiment that you wanted. You wouldn't have to mess around with any of this process. You could just go out and do whatever you, you know, providing you weren't trying to change mesh sizes and all that stuff.
Well, the center that I represent is providing, we think we're providing an idea to the council. We think not only we're providing an idea to the council, we think that we're providing an idea that's innovative, outside the box, and will contribute to improved management of the not only the yellowtail flounder, but the species mix that exists in and its interaction with the scallop fishery. So, I take John's remarks about channels, so on and so forth, and he's quite right. The council has an opportunity to say, hey, this is a really good idea, and we should figure out how to work on it, and or it can say we don't want to be bothered, or it can say, well, the administrator thought you'd be catching a lot more yellowtail than has been caught in the past, even though it hasn't been caught in the past. And so we're not talking to individuals about, you know, their allocations, so on and so forth. It's up to the council to say this is a good idea, if the council thinks so. If the council thinks it's a good idea, then we can work together on pushing it forward.
Cupcut. Tom and Mike and David, and then we're going to come to a decision.
Thanks. My comments were basically along the same lines as Terry's. I mean, we're at 19% on Georgia's Bank yellowtail. If the question is it a good idea to get more information on the yellowtail resource? My answer is yes. But, again, in terms of path of least resistance, I think Terry's absolutely right. We have 80% of the yellowtail quota still out there, right? So if people are interested in New Bedford or other places and supportive, then I'm sure they'd lease quota. Or if they were truly supportive and generous enough, maybe they'd donate some of that quota to be used to collect this kind of information. And we don't need an EFP. We don't need an emergency action or anything else. I mean, that'd be the way I'd suggest going forward. But if the question is, do we support better information or more information on the yellowtail? Absolutely. But I think the decision from the Secretary of Commerce was it has to be done in a way that's accountable and you know, within our ACL framework. And I think there's a huge opportunity to do that since we have 80% of the Georges Bank yellowtail quota left.
Mike, let's get these Mike and Dave's comments in.
I might forget what could I just respond to him and then,
yep,
please? I think that's a really good point. I didn't want to mention 19%. I just left it at 100 tons. 19% would leave it at much more. But that's the problem. The problem is that the secretary, the assistant administrator, writes a letter saying that this stock is overfished and we can't do this. And at the same time, only as you say, 19% of the quota is taken. So we can take up to 80% more, not overfish, and do our experiment. So I think it's circular.
Mike?
I caught it from him.
You know, I have a mixed reaction to this. I guess philosophically, I support many, if not most, of the things Brian's saying. There's an issue of timing, though, in that we do recently have this empirical assessment process that potentially could result in a substantially different outcome from the basis of the current assessment. And so I sort of feel like that needs to play out, and what the implications of that are after that result exists might drive to what degree there's an impetus to do this sort of survey as quickly as possible. So that's my reservation about taking an action now, because there's a ball in play that, in fact, Brian is citing, that's very important. But my other part of the reaction is based on my recollection of the scallop survey events, when actually Brian came to the university a year or two before I came back from Washington, D.C. to the center. And when I came back, we were in sort of this logjam of nobody would approve exempted fishing permits so we could go forward and do this survey work. And, you know, it was very frustrating. And eventually we worked together to get through that problem. And the cooperative surveys on Georges Bank occurred, which had great impact. We don't need to go into that. Now, part of the implication was that there actually had to be a will that there was going to be cooperation on all ends, university, government, and industry. And that, frankly, I still see is the issue now. It's we seem to always be able to figure out what the problem is and why it doesn't work or can't work, rather than saying it's a good idea, let's roll up our sleeves and figure out how to make it happen. Now, so having said that, I do feel that if there's a need, people can figure out how to roll up their sleeves and work together and make it happen. My reservation is right now, given the assessment process that's underway and under review, I'm not sure where we stand in terms of that immediate need. Thank you.
David.
Yeah, I think Brian is at a bit of a disadvantage because he did not hear our discussions relative to the research steering committee and the research questions they posed to us for our support that would provide some direction as to how recent monies made available to us could be spent. I suggest you take a look at that document, especially that part of the document that deals with swept area biomass, that indicates that swept area biomass and catchability studies were strongly recommended by the committee. So that's strongly recommended. Now, the research questions themselves that we adopted a couple of days ago I think some of them are related to the work that Brian has suggested. So perhaps with some further reflection, with an examination of those particular questions, your proposal could be retooled a bit relative to yellowtail flounder, with one of the research questions being, where are the Georges Bank yellowtail flounder hotspots, with hope for development of an avoidance system. And then this is also a section that deals with swept area biomass, specific to the NOAA survey trawl net, but there may be something you can offer up as part of your work that would be consistent with that particular research question as well. So I think the door is still open relative to a proposal that could be further developed consistent with these research questions that could then be submitted to the council, possibly for funding, or maybe an EFP initiative that would be consistent with these particular research questions, an EFP that could be entertained by the regional office. Again, notwithstanding the fact that Georges Bank yellowtail has to be found somewhere in order to justify that the catch that would occur, that's always going to be a difficult dilemma. But still, that's my suggestion to you, Brian, as to how you might want to move this forward.
Tom.
Yeah, I just want to be clear that the four specific research questions that the council adopted on Wednesday morning did not include the swept area issues that you're referring to.
John.
Yeah, I'm reluctant to make a suggestion to you because I know how much you know about this stuff, and I don't, but I'm just trying to capture what's been said. I wonder, have you considered applying for a scallop RSA project to lease the quota from some other boats and pay for the observers, and then that gets through several of the roadblocks that are out there on this? Just throwing it out as a future approach, maybe.
Hey, Brian, you got last word here.
I was going to answer John and say actually not, because we didn't plan on, our center didn't plan on doing the work and being funded for it. Rather, we want to see the work get done because we think it's better management of the fisheries.
So what's the sense of the council? What I'm hearing is a whole lot of support but some suggestions that you look at our RSA, work with us on the EFP, and let's get the information that we all need to better the yellowtail flounder science. So am I right? I'm seeing heads nod. You know, we've also, as Dr. Siswine and Pierce outlined, we will have the results of the empirical assessment coming up, and probably we should be in touch shortly after that. So appreciate you coming today. Okay, everyone, it is Mike. Yeah.
I did make the point that I didn't know where I stood on this because of the pending empirical assessment. So that's true. But I think we ought to consider this in the broader context about the value of having some sort of ongoing commitment to cooperation involving fishing industry agency and academia to provide alternative or additional data streams. So regardless of how this plays out on yellowtail right now, as a general matter, I think it's a constructive concept to be encouraging these sort of collaborative efforts that are truly collaborative with all of the players participating.
Okay, that all being said, it's almost 12:30. Let's take a break. We will start everybody back. We're going to continue our discussion on the motion to 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 on the motion to
the emotion to on 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 the emotion to on